This sacred episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Start your free trial by going to Squarespace.com. Use offer code Duncan. You'll get 10% off your first order. Sign up for a year. You get a free domain name. It's time for you to make the most beautiful website ever. Hello, my dear sweet friends. It is I, Duncan Trussell, and you are listening to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour podcast. I've just returned from Burning Man. I am now back in buffet land and have gorged myself on the sweet delicacies of this strange and savage place. I just had an encounter with the Kardashians. Can you believe it? We went to eat at a health food restaurant and surrounded by a crew of glazed over cameramen was one of the Kardashian women, engaged in some kind of very serious conversation with someone from the Kardashian show, right there in the middle of Cafe Gratitude, the weirdest thing ever. It's very rude to film your reality show at a restaurant. You should never do that. That's something we need to start teaching our kids, I guess. When you have your reality show, don't film it at a restaurant. It's a horrible form of exhibitionism. It would be better, honestly, it would be better, I think, or at least slightly more ethical, for a person in the middle of a restaurant to stand up, drop their pants, and to begin like slowly stroking their flaccid cock than to film a reality show at a restaurant. Because at least when you're stroking your flaccid cock in some moment of sick exhibitionist perversion, you're not putting out the implication that you're somehow successful. But when the Kardashians come ambling into a restaurant surrounded by a camera crew, like a flock of demonic seagulls hovering around the entrail-strewn deck of some ship manned by skeletal pirates slaughtering freshly caught mermaid babies, people actually get excited. Like, wow, look, the Kardashians. Can you believe it? I'll be able to call Daddy Bo and tell him that I saw the Kardashians filming at Cafe Gratitude. We're still at the point in our evolution as a species that there is something innately, implicitly glorious about having your own reality show. But one day it will be viewed as a kind of metaphysical venereal disease. You'll come down with a reality show. There'll be clinics that you can go to that'll try to like scrape the camera crew off of you. We'll have some form of penicillin or some new kind of medicine that when you take it, it actually cures you of the disease of having a fucking reality show surrounding you. And friends, ye who have not sinned, throw the first stone. I'm as guilty as can be here, pals. I guess I've been in a kind of reality show with Rogan. I don't know if that qualifies as a reality show. So forgive me. I'm just saying it's a bizarre thing, and God knows I'm as guilty as the worst, guiltiest, filthy, foul, narcissistic pig out there, pals. Sorry if I'm putting out a holier-than-thou thing. Sorry if it seems like I'm blowing a fart horn at the top of my high horse. I recognize that I am as guilty as anyone, and more than likely, if the reptilian president of Viacom took a moment to lift up his emerald inlaid golden telephone and rang my cell phone and said, "Duncan, we want to film a reality show about you," I'd be like, "Yes, sir, please, and I'll also suck your dick." So I'm guilty. It's just jarring. That's all I'm saying. Buffet land is jarring, and when you get a chance to get out of buffet land, whether through some kind of psychedelic or camping trip or Burning Man or a meditation retreat, and you come back, you get these few precious days of psychic disequilibrium known as re-entry, and it's really fun and really cool and really unnerving and ultimately awesome. So Burning Man was great. I'm not going to ear beat you about Burning Man, at least not on this podcast. If you want to torment yourself, if you have some kind of masochistic impulse and want to listen to somebody with a raspy lesbian voice ramble about Burning Man for approximately an hour, maybe you've kidnapped somebody and you have them tied to a chair in your living room and you really want to push them over the edge, or you want to leave a voicemail on the answering machine of one of your worst enemies, then if that's the case, head over to patreon.com/DTFH. And in a day or two, you will have all the Burning Man ear beatings you could ever want, because I am going to go on and on, and I'm not going to edit it, and it's going to like waver in and out of what appears to be a kind of profound psychedelic-induced schizophrenia to an incoherent moaning. I'll probably just start trying to do some kind of Tuvon throat singing. I'll more than likely start crying, and that will turn into fits of obnoxious laughter, and it'll just go on and on and on. So if that's what you're into, my sweet and beautiful loves, it will be there at patreon.com/DTFH. I'm going to start working on that as soon as I get this podcast uploaded. But in the meantime, if you find yourself afflicted with the current flu being sneezed out of the vile nostrils of the mass media, and you're a little on edge because there's three big hurricanes and an earthquake and solar flares that just happened, and you've pulled out your book of Revelations and have been looking through various passages, then this podcast is the cure for you. This podcast is the ointment. This podcast is the balm. Because with us today is philosopher, historian, and author Daniele Bolelli. And he's going to set us straight. This ain't the end of the world, friends. We live in a really beautiful, peaceful, wonderful time in human history. But if you're like me and you aren't schooled on history, then this shit can seem pretty terrible until you hear what things used to be like. Bolelli is here to bless us with his powerful, stabilizing, healing energy. We're going to jump right into it, but first, some quick business. This episode of the DTFH is brought to you by Squarespace.com. Whether you need a landing page, a beautiful gallery, a professional blog, or an online store, it's all included with your Squarespace website. And if you go to squarespace.com and enter offer code Duncan, you can start your free trial today and get 10% off your first purchase. Squarespace. It's easy to create a website with Squarespace. It's a simple, intuitive process. If you sign up for a year, you get a free custom domain. They have beautiful templates, seamless commerce tools, and excellent 24/7 customer support. Friends, Squarespace is an incredible service. The proof is in the pudding. If you want to see the power of Squarespace, go to DuncanTrussell.com. I use Squarespace for this podcast. Anytime I upload a new episode, I go to a Squarespace website, and I have never had a problem. It's a fantastic way for you to get that thing, whatever it may be, off the ground. It doesn't have to be some serious business. You don't need to put the menu for your Brooklyn Cafe up there. It could be something just for the sake of chaos. Or, as I've said many times before, you could sell your socks online. I have a friend who sells her stinky socks online. Think about that. The economy is booming. If you can sell your socks, if you can harvest stinky socks, you could create a sock farm. Have you thought about this? All you need is like 50 sweaty girls and get them to run on a treadmill for 5 minutes a day. And that's a money generating machine. You could become a billionaire in a matter of just a few months. I'm sure the demand for sweaty girl socks is high these days, because people who are in deep states of anxiety can only relax by putting a stinky girl sock in their mouth and, oh yeah, the sweet relaxation of the smell of a sweaty girl's feet as you watch hurricanes rip apart Florida. Friends, Squarespace is the website for you. They've got everything you need. I use them, and they are one of my longest sponsors. So show some support. Go to squarespace.com. Use offer code Duncan. Give it a try. You can start a free trial. If you don't like it, go somewhere else. Go find a hyper-expensive web designer. Go find a person who is going to extract little bits of your pineal gland in exchange for a website. Somebody who's going to latch on to your heart shocker with their vampiric, invisible proboscis and suckle away your joy in exchange for some website. If you want to do that, go do that. But if you're not into being vampirized and you just want a beautiful, awesome website, then Squarespace is the website for you. Go to squarespace.com, offer code Duncan, you'll get 10% off your first purchase. Sign up for a year, you get a free domain name. Also, much thanks to you who continue to use our Amazon portal. It's a link located at duncantrussell.com. You won't see it if you have an ad blocker on, but you swim through that link and anything that you buy on Amazon, they'll give us a small percentage of. But you know what I would recommend from Amazon.com? I would recommend an Ableton Push 2. I've really, really begun to understand just how addicted I am to making music. Am I good at it? No, not at all. Do I think I'm going to be some kind of famous musician or DJ? Absolutely not. But do I love it? Does it soothe me? Is there something about it that plugs into the deepest part of myself? Absolutely. And also, it's way more gratifying than playing Hearthstone. So go to Squarespace, pick up an Ableton Push 2, which is a MIDI pad that goes with Ableton, and dive into the beautiful world of music. Just go through the Amazon link located at duncantrussell.com. All right, pals, that's it for me. I'm back from Burning Man, ready to yap. We've got a lot of great interviews coming your way. I've got many scheduled for this week, so you're going to get a real supreme czar-style blast of podcast juice all over your face and chest. It's coming soon. In the meantime, please welcome to the Duncan Trussell Family Hour Podcast, author, teacher, philosopher, and host of the marvelous podcast, History on Fire, the great Daniele Bolelli. Hurricanes.
Yes.
Rumors of war.
Yes.
The internet freaking the fuck out right now. People freaking. Earthquake in
Mexico.
Of
course. Yeah. 8.1.
Is it the apocalypse or are people just ahistoric idiots?
I think the latter. Or rather, you know, it's one of those questions. Because eventually somebody will be right. You know, eventually every year there's somebody who says it's the apocalypse.
Right.
You know, sooner or later, just by possibility, somebody will catch it right. But no, I mean, there's always bad shit happening. You know, when one third of your population dies of the plague, I think you can think that the apocalypse is around, and yet the war continued, you know? So it's...
the hysteria. This hysteria, to me, seems an indication of what? Is it a failure of our education system? Is it a failure of people investigating the past?
No, I think we thrive on fear as a species. You know, and you can get why, because there are 10,000 things that can kill you out there in the universe. So obviously, like, there's even a logic to fear, because fear can be helpful in some occasion. It can be the thing that helps you. Don't go down the cave where the tiger live. Okay, maybe I shouldn't do that. You know, it keeps you alive. But then, of course, we have it on overhyped, where we suddenly we're afraid of everything, and there are, and news and stuff, they know that, so they hook you that way. It's like, fear, be very, very afraid, stay through the commercial break, because we'll tell you the next thing that can kill you, and how you can try to avoid it.
Right.
And every other human who is less than a Zen monk will go like, oh shit, I want to know what's going to kill me and how I can avoid it, because I don't like to die tomorrow, let's try to fix it. And so it's...
Right. But off the top of the head, off the top of your head, can you name three instances in history that are far worse than what we're currently witnessing?
Sure. Well, I mean, let's start with just here in the Americas, the fact that somewhere probably in the neighborhood of 80-90% of the entire indigenous population of the Americas got wiped out, mostly because of diseases, some because of violence.
How many people was that?
It's highly debated, but definitely in the millions.
Millions.
Oh, yeah. I mean, just Mexico alone, the most typical estimate you hear is that there were about 25 million people in indigenous Mexico. And within a few decades, there was 1 million people in indigenous Mexico. That's a 96% mortality rate.
How long ago is that?
That was in the 1500s.
Okay. So millions of indigenous Native American...
wiped out of nasty diseases because they had no immunity to it, you know, and some Spaniards show up, sneeze on you, and next thing you know, everybody start dying like flies. That's a bad day, right? And it's not just a bad day. That continues for months and years as new populations right. that haven't been exposed are exposed and all that stuff. And all of that shit, think about how weird it is. All of that happens because Europe, Asia, and Africa had domesticated animals and the Americas did not. And most of the diseases we get come to us from domesticated animals.
Whoa.
So because the Americas were so awesome, disease-free, it's awesome until you meet somebody who has exposure to these diseases and then none of your ancestors do. These dirty bastards sneeze on you and you start dying like by the millions.
And they're not just sneezing on you. They're chopping you up on top.
There's that exactly on the side.
They're sneezing on you while they chop your arms off.
Absolutely, yes.
Fun.
Good times. So, yeah, that would probably be worse than right now.
Okay, so there's one. Let's keep going.
Yeah. Jesus, without even going far, think about like Savannah comes from Cambodia. So just 1970s Cambodia when the Khmer Rouge kick in and they start wiping out. I forget what the percentage is, but an insane percentage of the country in just a full-scale genocide. You know, the stories that her mom tells you, not like a million years ago, when her mom tells you that, you know, they were lived in the jungle, running away from the Khmer Rouge, trying to flee Cambodia, her friend getting blown up right next to her, her baby brother dying of starvation in the jungle, you're there drinking from a river and you see a body floating by, you know, that kind of shit where you're like, okay, that's some heavy stuff, you know, and that's, you know, today I'm sure you can go in different parts of the world that are not where we sit right here right now and it sucks beyond imagination, you know?
Right.
So I think there's always nasty
shit. Oh yeah, let's not forget that. While everyone's freaking out because some Floridians are about to get their mansions blasted.
Right.
Not all, you know, obviously there's people who are not living in mansions, but people are, to me, this is something that was it's quite interesting. I saw this, I was online in a frenzy of hysteria from being infected by the news.
The fear bug, right?
Yeah, got the fear bug. Want to feed it, scratching the itch.
Yeah.
And I find a YouTube montage of the devastation of one of these Caribbean islands, right? Where I think two people died, maybe three people, something like that. I don't know the amount. Relatively small amount of people for that. But it's showing buildings that have been leveled.
Right.
And then underneath it, this sappy fucking song, like, we will survive. Super, super sappy.
Right.
Because we've gotten to the point here where we care about buildings as much as we do about people. That's just a fucking building.
Totally.
Rebuild. Who gives a shit?
And the way they show it to you, too. Like, I remember when I moved to LA in 92. That was just a few months right after the riots, right?
Yeah.
So I was still living in Milan in Italy, and I knew that I was coming to LA. And so it's like the news come on, and it's like, oh, riots in LA. And I kid you not, the way the news made it look, all of LA had burned to the ground.
Right.
Because they would show those same three blocks in downtown LA from every possible angle, making it look like the entire city had been razed to the ground.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit. And then I came to LA like, 3 months later, and it looked fine. You know, it was all. There were a few places where, they got burned bad, but you know, overall, the city was fine.
What would happen to an indigenous tribe if a hurricane came? What would happen or an earthquake? How do indigenous people react to that kind of destruction?
I think it depends on which kind, because you know, there are indigenous people like hunting and gathering groups where you just move somewhere else. You have like more sedentary people who are stuck in a place, so it would be a little harder to kind of pack up and rebuild everything next door. Of course, the interpretations got funny. Like, there's a whole story here in California about the earthquake in San Francisco in 19 or whatever the hell it was, early 1900s, where there was this whole theory of these two guys who said it was those two motherfuckers who caused it, because they are this powerful shaman and they were casting spells at each other, and one of them got a little out of hand.
Wow.
And it caused the San Francisco. So, you know, the explanations for how things happen or why they do may vary quite a bit. And
that's fascinating. That's
and therefore what you need to do about it, you know?
Oh, right. But, so they have an extra sort of mythological adjustment they have to make to, after an earthquake.
So they don't just
rebuild. They've got to rebuild certain metaphysical structures that we can't even see.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
Yeah, you have like in the among the Hopi, for example, in these guys got conquered by the Spaniards in the 1500s. And then in the 1600s, they had a period of long drought, right? And to the Hopi, this was not a coincidence. Our religion is built on doing ceremonies that make the spirits happy. The spirits bring the clouds, rainfall, we have good crops.
Yeah.
These motherfucking Spaniards burn us alive if we try to do our ceremonies. So we haven't been able to do our ceremonies. The spirits are mad. Guess what? There's no rain.
Right.
To them, it was like, well, that's cause and effect. It makes perfect sense.
Right.
And we are not going to get any rain until we can get rid of the Spaniards. And so that's why they put on this wild rebellion and were able to pull it off. Because they were like, we're never going to get rain again. This is how it's going to be.
Yeah.
So it's...
What do you think about that?
Well, I mean...
Do you think they were idiots?
I have no idea. Like, I honestly don't have the slightest clue of how the universe works.
Me either.
Which is why, to me, when like the whole hardcore scientific materialist model doesn't really make sense to me, because I've seen too many times when it doesn't apply, where it's like, well, according to the laws of physics, what I just witnessed right now should not have happened.
Right.
So you can come tell me again how the universe works, but I just saw that that's not the way it works. So... doesn't mean I know how it works, but it kind of keeps me open to the possibility that life is considerably weirder than we can possibly begin to imagine.
These shamans, the shamans of scientific materialism and the spell they cast is a really interesting spell, because it surrounds you in a dome of probability and statistics.
Yep. Yep.
And within this dome, certain phenomena do happen, but they're ignored. They're, they're sort of invisible. Like, you see these things, but the words they have for them are things like, well, that's anecdotal evidence.
Yeah.
We remember the hits. Whatever the thing is that you're reporting, it's, even though we've been hearing stories of this since the dawn of time, it's nothing. It's just sort of a trick of the mind. Let us ignore it.
Right.
And so the moment you fall under this linguistic spell of one of those shamans, the world that you exist in becomes pretty safe. It becomes predictable.
Yep.
Your superstitious inclinations are something that you can ignore, discard. Prayer becomes irrelevant.
Ridiculous.
What are you
doing? Yeah,
who
it's
are
like
you praying
a crazy
to?
Guy talking to yourself.
Pointless. And so once you fall under the spell of one of these beings, I guess the only way to put it is you better fucking hope they're right.
Yep.
Because if they're not right, or if they have excluded, as seems to be the pattern throughout history, some kind of energetic field that we as have only heard about in stories or heard about in like colorful myths, then you basically are like, you're not charging your phone. There's that there might be a part of you that needs to plug into a socket that it isn't being plugged in.
Totally, man. And don't get me wrong. I mean, there's obviously great things about science. Science is sure as hell beats ignorance. You know,
Absolutely.
It's awesome. But the arrogance of science, where it tries to argue that we know more than we actually do, that we have all the... It's like, no, man, you are a baboon playing with the giant computer. It's like, you don't know shit. You know, you know this, you know, 1 inch
in
a world that's thousands of miles wide. And be open to... to me, the thing that's fun is that it's the same as a religious fundamentalist that's trying to constantly fit experience through the lenses of their ideology.
Right.
That approach that tried desperately to make it fit in a scientific materialistic model, even when objectively it's like, dude, you have to bend over backward to try to make it fit there, because it really doesn't look like it does. It it's telling me that you are not comfortable with uncertainty.
Right.
That you want so bad the world to conform to this model that you cannot accept the idea, which is the opposite of being scientific. Yeah. Being scientific should be use the data, use the evidence, and accept that sometimes the evidence may put your theoretical model in trouble. And that's not the way usually people handle it.
Yeah, and also the type of acceptable data, the acceptable data, it doesn't involve DMT.
Yeah.
That data is something that you just look at and throw away. And yet when you smoke DMT and you go into this space of intense familiarity,
right,
and you witness... what is it? What in Ghostbusters? What was it called? A free form standing apparition. What do they call it? Remember that? It's a free form standing apparition.
Yeah.
When you witness these things, and you see them clearly, plain as day, and you look at this obvious biome.
Yeah.
Is the only way to put it. Some kind of biome that we are also part of. Then you suddenly get placed in a really interesting predicament, which is that here in buffet land or wherever we live, that stuff is, I guess, it's too much.
Yep.
We can't measure it. We can't deal with it. We call it a subjective.
It's an hallucination. It's hallucination. Whatever. Yeah, exactly.
And yet when you go there, it's so specifically real.
Yep.
So sometimes I think, well, you know what I bet? I bet some of these scientists, not all of them, but some of these scientists are like really good translators. And they know about that realm. But they come back here understanding that if they are to walk through the streets talking about like their beings surrounding us,
Of course,
that are fascinating creatures
that
have varying motivations and intentions, just like human beings. But we grow from a realm filled, populated with these things into this amnesic realm. If you were to go around saying that shit as a scientist, you're not going to get any work done.
No, probably not. Never mind the fact that it can make life fairly weird, right? I think he was, you had him on your podcast, Hamilton.
Yeah.
Souther. Yeah. He was telling this whole story about how, you know, for he started having this vision of this spirit that would like be by his side for like a month straight and constantly. And, you know, everybody was all spellbound by this story and they were like, oh, really, the spirit. And after a while, I just couldn't tell myself. He left a pause in the dialogue and I was like, man, that must have made masturbation really uncomfortable. You know, it's like... You're there just doing your thing and the spirit is just checking it out. And it's like, do you mind going into the next room? Can you go haunt somebody else for just 10 minutes? Give me 10 minutes. That's all I did, you know?
It interferes with every single facet of our reality.
Yeah.
If you live in that, if you live in the dome of scientific materialism, then that world is definitely going to fuck you up pretty bad. People are scared of it. You know, one of the, when I was at Burning Man, and we were talking about DMT with someone, and she's like, you know, it gets pretty tentacly in there, you know? And I remember thinking later, what's wrong with tentacles? Why do people, you know, like, to me, I think there's a few things that are hilarious about heavy metal albums. Pentagrams are apparently evil.
Yep.
Goat heads, goats. Have you ever been around a goat?
Oh, yeah.
They're the sweetest creatures.
They're adorable.
Adorable.
Yes.
They make milk. They're wonderful.
Yep.
They're like funny.
Yep.
They're smart.
They're very affectionate, too.
They're affectionate.
In an odd kind of way.
Yeah. And they've landed somehow us monkey descendants create this line.
Yeah.
And on one side of the line are the good creatures. On the other side of the line are the bad creatures.
Yep.
Like another thing that happened at Burning Man, there was an owl sculpture and somebody was like, oh, that's a bad omen. And then someone jumped off the owl sculpture confirming the idea, oh, this is a bad omen. But really, like owls, really?
Yeah.
They land on the dark side because they hang out at night.
Of course.
Mice. They help us with mice. They're wonderful. On the other side, what do we have? What's on the light side of creatures that you want? What creatures don't you see on a heavy metal album?
Let's see.
The dove.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Oh, the sacred dove. The lamb.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. All the white stuff, right?
Yeah, white stuff.
Yeah.
Racist.
Fucking racist animals.
Yeah, no, no black animals. No black animals end up on that side. You never see that. It's always just white, white fluffy unicorns.
Yes.
End up on the light side. Lizards, they end up on the dark side.
Yep.
Dragons, reptiles. It's hilarious.
It is.
We live in a world where there are some people who believe there are evil animals.
Yep.
The black cat.
And I think that's where suddenly, when you hang around that crowd for too long, suddenly you go back to your scientific materialist friend and say, please hug me and hold me close, because these crazy bastards are just annoying the hell out of me.
You are like downloading every Dawkins audiobook. Exactly. It's like, just get me the fuck away from these idiots.
Totally. And I get that. You know, I do have that reaction. When you, when you're around one of those crowds for too long, you crave the other. And then when you get the other, it's like, well, it turns out I don't really crave this at all.
It's,
there's something happy in between these two crazy extremes where there's actually real life.
Yeah.
And yeah, completely.
We want to be able to jump channels. I mean, this is what Ram Dass talks about. I want to be able to hang out with you in the realm of scientific materialism, analyzing the world from a purely rational lens, discarding all this. There are no free-form floating apparitions. There are no evil animals. There is only matter and various formations of matter, and we can measure it and analyze it, manipulate it, change it. But let's hang out here. That's a good place to hang out. But also, you need to be able to hop into the realm of myth.
Of course.
From there, to jump into it, and not just jump into it like a game of make-believe, but also like, okay, I think really there might be a realm of tentacled, super intelligent entities that exist simultaneous to this realm. And you need to be able to go to that realm too. And you need to be able to go back and forth. You got to commute. That's the idea. Have a commute. Jump from one to the next to the other without going nuts.
That's the origin of a lot of alien porn. Tentacle porn. That's where it started from, a bad, or maybe a good one. I don't know. That's some DMT trip, I think.
Yeah. Tentacle porn. Yeah. Tentacles. First of all, let's think about what beings have tentacles, right? It's octopi,
octopus,
right?
Of course. Yeah.
It's squid.
Yeah.
What else has it? What else has tentacles that we know of?
Those are the ones that come to my mind.
And
I'm
look
sure
at the beautiful
more.
Fucking octopus.
Yeah.
It's
animal.
Amazing.
Yep.
Really smart,
yep.
Sneaky, changes colors. Has Terrence McKenna talked about the way that it can imagine how more profound our level of communication would be if we had tentacles?
Yep.
Because our body language is so limited based on our bodies.
Of course.
So if we were like shape-shifting, color-changing tentacle creatures, the ability to really communicate, this is how I feel. You know, instead of like, now if we're sad, well, I guess we could like clutch our heart.
Right.
Frown, seem sort of down, bedraggled. But fuck, if you had tentacles and could change colors.
That would be the way to go, huh?
You could tune directly into a very specific form of sadness where you could be like, oh, no, I'm this kind of sadness.
Right.
I'm the sadness where my tentacles are shaped in this way and I'm a light chartreuse, trembling light chartreuse hovering above a steam vent or something. Like, oh, God, that's rough. You got the blues, man. Oh,
I miss these conversations. This is awesome.
So, you know, it's to me, it's like a curious world we live in right now. You know, actually, I was talking to my friend and we were discussing the tentacles. And she said that if someone really loves you and feels comfortable around you, they're going to show you the darkest part of themselves. You know, if someone really loves you, it's like, and it's going to suck for you to see it because you want them to be perfect.
Yeah.
But if you're going to see the thing, whatever it is, the jealousy, the pettiness, the selfishness, the stuff that needs to get worked on,
of course.
Stuff that needs to be polished a little bit, perfected. But if they show that to you instead of putting on their like marketplace face, then that's a form of love.
I agree completely.
So if God or the force of the universe or source comes to you as you are enjoying the effects of some plant medicine and shows you the tentacles and the pentagrams and the goat heads and the teeth and the thing, really, it's a beautiful thing because it's the universe being like, I feel comfortable enough around you
that I can bring out the clothes and let you know that, yeah, they are there. I'm working on it, yeah. But it's...
Or
yeah.
I'm not working on it. Maybe I'm not. Maybe this is just as perfect
right.
as that. And so when it comes to you in a trip or a dream or a moment of paranoia, instead of reacting like, what the fuck, I must escape, you're like, I still love you.
You really love me, right?
I love you. I'm not going to reject you, universe, even though sometimes you appear as a fucking goat thing with pure black eyes that seems fixated on some kind of absolute power. I still love that, too. You're still a sweetie.
No, we can make it better. We could have a goat with tentacles. That's the next step.
Tentacled goat. Yes. And the tentacles are covered in pentagrams.
Yes. That's a heavy metal cover right there.
That's a fucking heavy metal cover. Yeah. That's amazing. But then it's like, meanwhile, as everyone is like, you know, as the fundamentalists are freaking out over these symbols. Meanwhile, look at the world that we're in. What's really happening? Because it's like if you really wanted to put an evil creature on your heavy metal cover, human baby.
Oh yeah,
that's what you want, human baby.
Fucking monsters.
Because that thing has the potential to turn into something way worse than a goat.
Right.
Goat's not going to split the atom.
Yeah.
A goat's not going to bioengineer some kind of disease. A goat is not going to walk into a fucking mosque and detonate themselves.
Of course.
Human baby.
The potential is there, most definitely.
Yeah.
They can turn into sweet little things, or they can turn in a pretty fucking dark direction that no animal can go to.
Oh, man, how would you describe the time in history that we're at right now? What is this? A lot of people are calling this, late stage capitalism?
I mean, the thing that's trippy is that the speed of which change has taken place. You know, it's kind of like so much of human history has been this slow rolling thing where it's like we're just getting our muscles stretched and we're beginning the workout. And now we're in the middle of the crazy intense part, because if you go back, not even that long ago, 30 years, the world that we lived in 30 years ago before the internet was completely different from the world we live in today.
Right.
The kind of technologies that are coming out in the next 1, 2, 5, 10 years are going to change life again in ways that right now look pure sci-fi.
Right.
So it's kind of trippy because we live on very unstable ground. You know, we are constantly, we don't know what things are. You know, if you live in you are a peasant in the 1300s, you don't know whether you are going to be alive or not because some crazy plague can come in. But you kind of have a sense of what the world will look like in 50 years. It's like probably the same way as it has looked for the last 500, because it doesn't really change much. Now, you have no idea what the hell the world will look out in 50 years, you know? I think some people like it. It's exciting. There's this sense of possibility. And some people are scared shitless because there is this sense of possibility in a negative way, too, you know? Because it can go both ways. It's kind of like a human baby, right? It doesn't mean it's going to turn horrendously evil. It doesn't mean that it's going to be a nice, sweet human being. It can really go both ways.
Right.
And history right now feels like that. Like, it can really turn into this utopic thing where we solve environmental problems. People no longer have to work much. They'll spend their time daydreaming and finding pure enlightenment, and everybody's happy. Or it can turn into this dystopian, nasty shit where we blow ourselves up 72 times. And they're both realistic possibilities.
Right.
That's the thing that's freaky. And so I think a lot of people are surfing between deciding whether should I kill myself now to avoid seeing the horror that's coming, or the age of enlightenment is coming and everything is going to be amazing.
Well, maybe one precedes the other, right?
Could be, or it could be more likely a mix of both, since rarely things are one way or the other. You know, it's like any technology, you know, internet has opened up so much cool stuff. It has also opened some pretty fucked up stuff, you know. It's the nature of the business.
What do you think is the fundamental problem right now? Like, what is it? Here we are in a super technological civilization. If you look statistically, people have more than they've ever had.
Sure.
What do you think is the wind in the sails of this dystopian,
the nasty one,
prognostication?
Well, I think is just because we have cool stuff or more possibilities doesn't mean that we have figured out how to be happy. You know, in some level, the degree of happiness of some guy who was in a cave 1,000 years ago versus somebody today with access to all the information in the world, their odds of finding happiness are not that dramatically different. It's not that technology has augmented, enlarged the range of our possibilities, of our capabilities, but our possibilities, where before was, you know, plus one and minus one, now it may be plus 10 and minus 10, but it hasn't really skewed the direction in like, oh, it's all going to be on the positive side. No, we can also do more fucked up shit. We can also do more great stuff. So it's more, it's not necessarily better in a qualitative sense.
You mean like it's, so we have all this extra stuff. It's like the classic story, super rich guy, beautiful house, incredible car, lots of money. Haven't seen him for a couple of days. Go to a mansion in the bathroom. He's blown his brains out.
Exactly.
And so that's the here we are, this like we're as a species we're living in this mansion and we're having these incredible parties but there's this idea that we're gonna put a fucking nuclear missile in our mouth and fucking blow our fucking brains out.
Yeah, that's a problem.
But what do you think is the foundation of happiness?
Yeah, because it's not an easy thing. Otherwise, more and more people would be happy. And the reality is that most people are not, to one degree or another. And I think really there's an existential side to it, that in a universe where you know that everything that makes you happy, you're going to lose it at one point or another, that inevitably is sort of the fly that drops in your soup. I was enjoying this soup so much, and now this fucking dead fly reminds me that there's a problem here that I can't quite enjoy the same way.
So you're saying that the common idea that you are going to lose everything when you die has made our existence bitter.
Yep, definitely. Because you know that you're going to die, everyone you know is going to die. And assuming you're lucky, that happens in old age where you haven't lost everything along the way, where it just happens kind of at the end of the story. That's if you're lucky. And then you think, well, at least my contribution to humanity will survive. Probably not. The vast majority of human beings are not going to leave a trace. Even the ones that do, give it long enough time, they probably won't. Even our universe is eventually going to go kaboom.
Yeah.
It's... you know, this is a game where everything comes to an end, at least according to the scientific materialist model.
Well, let's talk about that, because I think this idea which used to torment me and which I definitely would drag out sometimes on stage if I really wanted to like be an edgelord and talk in everyone's night. As though I discovered, I would like bring it out on stage sometimes. Of course. You're all gonna die. I think lately I've been thinking about that idea, and I think that is one of the yet another like incredible misapprehension that humans have, because we compare the universe to us.
Yeah,
right.
Of course.
So we think of the universe as being somehow experiencing our limitations.
Yep.
Right.
Of course.
And the human limitations, and we do this with everything. So we think when the spaceship comes, it's going to come as a silver craft. Mm-hmm. Even fucking L. Ron Hubbard, he said, like, the spaceships that brought the Thetans to Earth in Scientology were shaped like, I don't care, remember, like Cessnas or something, or B-52 bombers.
Yeah, of course.
He, like, went on, like, the aliens are going to fly in, like, space planes.
1950 right? technologies, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what we do. And so because of that, we probably, UFOs are landing around us all the fucking time, but we don't see them because they're not like shaped the way we think they should be.
Yep.
So in the same way, I think that when we think of the universe, we really underestimate what infinity means, and we really underestimate time itself, right? We think, okay, we think because we can't see the past, the past is gone.
Of course.
But we're really kind of like burrowing through time. But we can't see the tunnel behind us except in memory. Yep. That's the way we see it. But we imagine that because we can't see the tunnel behind us, the tunnel must not exist anymore. The tunnel is gone.
Yep.
When I don't think that's the case at all.
Right.
I think that riverbed, that tunnel, that footprints, the things that we left in our wake, they still exist.
Absolutely.
And to imagine that the universe couldn't, if it wanted to,
yeah,
populate any segment of that tunnel at any moment that it wanted to.
Right.
In other words, you could theoretically, if you were the sum total of all things expanding and infinitely, mm-hmm, exponentially gaining power, whatever word you want, yeah, you could theoretically be like, you know what? I think I want to land in 2017 in the Bilelli life tunnel during that, right, podcast for a second, just to be there.
Yeah.
And zap, you're back here again, right here.
Yeah.
You know, only we, because we are on a river of time, mm-hmm, you know, moving towards, yeah, this moment of that we call death, we can't go back. The current's, mm-hmm, too strong. But I think that the consciousness of the universe could populate any segment of your life, totally, at any time you want forever.
Well, and that's the trick, that we can only know what our experience or our awareness of our experience is.
Yeah.
But the reality is that, again, unless you buy into a super strict scientific materialist model, nobody knows what the real totality of experience is.
That's right.
You know, it's kind of like the Zen question. What was your face before you were born? What?
Right.
It's like, maybe there was a lot going on there.
Yeah.
And it's entirely possible. And so it's like, maybe what we see as life is such a limited fraction of what's out there to be perceived. But of course, because that's all we know, you got to base your feelings, your impression on what you actually do know, not just on some theoretical possibility, even though the theoretical possibility may be completely correct.
Well, this is why we need psychedelics, because, right, we need it to go from a theoretical possibility, yep, to an experiential,
exactly,
truth.
Right.
Even if it is a subjective experience, yeah, I think this is the healing of psychedelics, yep, is that when you go into a ceremonial, intentional psychedelic space, and you get a quick reminder of like, hey, check it out. Oh, fuck.
Now I remember, right.
Home. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm home again. Yeah. Oh, there's a home. And then in that moment of coming home, which, uh-huh, a great psychedelic trip is certainly coming home, you get to come back here and realize you're kind of on a camping trip.
It's like, this is still fun. I'll still stick around, but I know where home is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. And that's, I think, is why people's conception of what the universe is may vary so much, and there's really no fucking way for somebody to tell you, no, yours is wrong, yours is fake, yours is made up, because it's like, you don't fucking know yourself. What are you talking? You're basing a conclusion on very incomplete information.
Yes.
So be open to the fact that it may not be that way at all, you know?
Well, when people explore conquering disease, mm-hmm, they go upstream.
Yep.
Because the idea is we can deal with like all the varieties of disease that exist on the world, or we can figure out a way to make clean water happen. Mm-hmm. Make clean water happen, get rid of, I don't know, yep, the percentage, but a massive percentage of disease goes, sure, bye-bye the moment you figure out a way to create some kind of cost-effective, hopefully free,
yeah,
methodology of like, or technique or technology of cleaning water,
yep,
that you can get to people all over the world.
Sure.
You do that, you get rid of a bunch of disease. So in the same way that you mentioned this existential predicament, mm-hmm, or the thought virus of death,
yep,
and the concept of oblivion waiting at the end,
mm-hmm,
and the idea there is nothing else,
yep,
we're just sort of a configuration of atoms,
yep,
floating through time, we're going to dissipate, it's all gone. If that is true, well, yeah, some anxiety for sure.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Surrender eventually, but anxiety. But if that's not true, then if you could come up with a way to convey something that makes people who are caught in that idea of the finite self,
mm-hmm,
no longer let go of that idea, then you cure a kind of existential malaria.
Absolutely. And it's funny because nothing has been able to do it on a mass scale. Because, I mean, even religion, which of course delivers that promise, right? Because you have this is not the end. You are either going to heaven or you're going to be reincarnated, or there's something where it's like, no, what you think is the story is a tiny portion of the story.
Yeah.
Clearly, it has worked for some people, but most people haven't believed in it enough to actually fully relieve existential anxiety. It's been like their methadone, you know, it kind of hits the spot a little, but not really to the core. Because, of course, otherwise, you know, if you are super religious people and somebody die, you'd be like, oh, that's awesome, man, that's great, they finally got to go to heaven. Or whereas everybody's always like, oh, shit, you know, it's like, you don't believe it, motherfucker. Right. If you believed it, right, you'd be in a... You know, and so there's, I think religions have done it to a degree, but because it's too theoretical, it's too a concept, it's not something that, you know, it's different if you close your eyes and you go to heaven and you see, oh, I touch it, I feel it, it's a real place. Okay, now I can relax now back
in life.
We got
to get you to heaven.
Exactly.
And this is why the one of the many uses of psilocybin that they're studying is people who are... dying, they give them enough psilocybin so they go home before they go home.
Yep.
So they're so terrified of dying, and then suddenly they're like, oh, that's let's get to this be over with. Yeah, yeah,
exactly.
Come on, man, I gotta get back.
Yeah.
You know, it's so pretty there. It's so powerful there. It's so wonderful there. And we're there right now. And I think that part of the game is... Actually, somebody was explaining something to me, this concept of the wobble. Have you ever heard of this?
No, what's that?
So... it's really cool. So the wobble is the way humans go from moments of bliss or, you know, you experience some kind of insane synchronicity, like an impossible synchronicity. And you experience that a few times in a row in a few days. And it happens, you start thinking like, oh, wait a minute. Oh, okay, there's definitely something more going on here than I thought. And maybe you take a psychedelic and you experience that true fundamental self, and you're like, oh right, oh I get it, okay yeah, I get it now, right, we're like pure potentiality and we come here as a form of healing to heal the particular incarnation that we're momentarily encountering. And then you get an email from your accountant which is like, can you please send those fucking receipts, because you know what I mean? And then you're like, God damn, I got to send these receipts.
Yeah.
I'm in a receipt land. And you forget all about that shit. So that's the wobble.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Right?
Yeah.
It's the wobble. So I think that the trick is to figure out a way to do both without the wobble. To like live in receipt land while simultaneously existing in the source. People now popularly call it.
That's some serious Taoist balance required, right? Yeah. You have to be such a good surfer to be, I'm on this side, but I'm also on this side. And it's constantly shifting, and you have to be dynamic enough to adjust 2% this way, 5% that way. Oh, now bringing it back. And, you know, that's why to me, like, the metaphor of surfing has always fascinated me, because to me, a lot of life is like that.
Yes.
In most anything we can talk about, it's always about this finding that sweet spot, that delicate balance where everything flows.
That's it.
And if you go a little, not too much in the abstract, because maybe too much, that same movement to the side is great in a different context, but in that one moment, it throws you off balance and you fall off. So to be able to read it, to be able to feel it, to be able to adapt to it, to be able to ride that wave, that to me is mastering life. You know, that's what real mastery is.
So, okay, let's use that. So we're surfing together. When you're surfing, there must be, I have no fucking idea. I've only watched people surf. Yeah. I've body surfed before.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure doesn't count. But my guess would be that when you're surfing, there's a feeling.
Yeah.
A sense of balance, a sense of contact with some kind of, I don't know, force.
Sure.
That feel where you're in the, you feel it. It's there. So what is that? What do you think that is? Is it just balance?
No, I think it's like you are hearing a music, sort of the music of the universe, and you're able to play the right note at the right time and you fall in sync.
Cool.
You know?
Oh my God, that's so cool. So yeah, fuck surfing. Forget that stupid metaphor. Because you know what the thing is? We don't know shit about surfing.
Of course.
I don't know what the universe is like surfing, but one thing I do know a little bit about, and anyone who's alive knows about, is singing with people.
Yeah.
We know how to sing with people. And that's really, really cool, man. Because it's, that's it. That's it. I love that. It's like, are you singing? You're definitely singing with the universe, whether you like it or not.
Sure.
But the question is, are you harmonizing with the universe.
And that's the same note they are hitting 10 seconds too late. Well, that was good 10 seconds ago, but now we moved on to something else. It's not that the note is wrong, it's that your timing is off.
That's it.
And I think that becomes, and I think you feel that way, potentially pretty much any activity can allow you to feel that. You know, if I, again, I don't surf, so what the fuck am I talking about? But like if I roll in jiu-jitsu, there is that feeling sometime where it's like you hit the right move at the right fraction of a second and suddenly it's effortless. And you don't, and you're just getting smashed by some heavy body. And it's all that timing. It's all that ability to find the right moment. And I really think that, I think when the Taoists speak of Wu Wei, you know, the effortless action, that's what it is. You have the right timing, when you read the situation and you harmonize at the right moment, everything is easy.
That's right.
And when you don't, everything is hard. It's not that you're evil. It's just, now it's hard because you're offbeat.
And when everything gets easy, you know what some people do? Make it hard.
Of course.
They don't want it to be easy. They don't like that.
Yeah.
They want to be in control, and they associate suffering with control.
Yep.
But really, so it's like they think if they're not suffering, they must be out of control.
Mm-hmm.
When the truth of the matter is, if you try to control the universe, you can only suffer.
Totally.
I think another way that people can experience this form of singing is work with a community.
Sure.
And this is the thing that is lost. This is like this for a lot of people. And you go to work and you sing the song of the corporation. Mm-hmm.
That's
right?
A bad, sad moment.
Yeah. And you're doing the song for sure. But the song, the people you're singing it with, they don't really care about you because they're trying to keep their job.
Totally.
And they want to get promoted. And they want, they're living in a model of like, God, I just watched this fucking History Channel great documentary on Vanderbilt and the railroads, and it keeps cutting to interviews with like billionaires, Trump being one of them, and he does the interviews, and all these billionaires, the song they sing is the most depressing song you've ever heard, which is, it's not about money, it's about winning, and we all must live in a constant state of mild paranoia because people are always trying to get you.
Wow.
And you have to get them first. So this is the song that has created America in a lot of ways. It creates the song of industry. It's the song of competition. It's the song of this is mine, not yours, mine, not yours. You fucked up. You weren't willing to go hard enough. And because you weren't willing to go hard enough, you lost and I won. And I don't have to have sympathy or pity or empathy or compassion or feel anything mildly positive for your plight at all, because it's survival of the fittest, baby, and the market's always right. Go fuck yourself, loser. So that's the fucking song, right?
Totally.
And the way they sing the song is in different ways, but that's the basic song. It's the song of evolution. It's the song of the tiger destroying the sheep that can't run fast enough. That's the song. So what happens is people begin to associate in the same way, God forgive me for saying this, but in the same way when people have had like a really traumatic sexual experience, they begin to associate sex with horror.
Of course.
And one of the sweetest things in life becomes for them a stressful, horrible experience. In the same way work for so many of us has been tainted by singing the song with this evil song. When the truth is, man, when you have a group of people that you love, that you really love, not a group of industry friends,
Of course.
Marketplace friends. Those people are fine too. The marketplace friends, they all happen to do the same thing you do.
Sure.
You know, let's do shop talk. Marketplace friends. No. When you find a group of people who all are doing different things, who love each other, who really love each other, who are in love with each other, who are like, whoa, you're fucking cool, man. When you have a group of people like that, and you build something with a group of people like that, that is one of the sweetest, most healing songs. And that's where you could feel that thing you're talking about, effortless action.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're with this group of humans who've all tuned into each other through love, and they're all building something together. And you're sweating.
Yep.
Your shirt is soaked with sweat. You're fucking bleeding because you like cut your hand open, you know, doing something. You've got blood on your fucking shirt. It hurts, but it doesn't feel like you're working at all. It feels like you're flying. And this thing is growing in front of you with your friends. That to me is one of the pure cures for the great sorrow of life, if you ask me. And I think a lot of people, they don't even know that's a possibility.
I agree 110%. I mean, even if you think about it, just as human beings, for 99% of the time we've been around, we have lived in small, tight-knit communities. Yes. You have lived with those 10, 20, 30, 40 people that you know since the time you were born, that you click with, where... And, you know, we are used to living in tribes. Modern living, in some way, has freed us from the dark side of tribes. You know, if the 40 people you live with are a bunch of assholes and that's all you know, you're like, get me out of here as soon as possible, right? So there's a dark side of the tribe, but there's also the happy... That's what we're hardwired for. We're built to live in small communities. Yes. Not having that drives us insane and makes happiness less likely.
Yeah.
There's a quote that I was digging for because it was exactly what you were saying, right? I was lecturing on it last night in a U.S. history class. There's after the U.S. conquered a bunch of different all American Indian tribes, there's one piece of legislation that they passed in 1887 called the Dawes Act that's basically taking tribal land, and rather than having the reservation being owned by the tribe, will divide up the reservation into parcels of private property so that each native family can own their little plot of land, which on the surface looks like that's kind of tedious. Why are we even talking about it, right? There's a quote by Henry Dawes, the guy who put the legislation forward, that articulates it in a way that's freaky. I'll read it to you because Please. It's just too good. He talks about a visit that he did to an American Indian tribe, and he seemed to paint a scenario that looks amazing, and yet it's completely not, like, he's like, no, we need to fix it. Like, I'll read it to you. He says, the head chief told us that there was not a family in the whole nation that didn't have a home of its own. There wasn't a poor person in that nation, and the nation didn't owe a dollar. Yet, the defect of the system was apparent. They've got as far as they can go because they own their land in common. There is no enterprise to make your home any better than that of your neighbors. There is no selfishness which is at the bottom of civilization. Until these people consent to give up their lands and divide them among their citizens so each can own the land he cultivates, they will not make much progress.
Oh my God.
Is that trippy or what? It's like, he sounds like he's giving them a compliment. He says, oh, they are not selfish. And he's saying, shit, we need to teach them to be selfish real quick because that's what being civilized is all about.
Let me see that. Let me see that. I want to read that in a different voice.
Yet the defect of the system was apparent. They have got as far as they can go because they own their land in common. There is no enterprise to make your home any better than that of your neighbors. There is no selfishness which is at the bottom of civilization. And I love to lick the bottom of civilization with my snake tongue. I love to shove my reptile tongue deep into the oozing bottom of civilization.
That's a fucking demon.
A demon
wrote that.
That is.
Yeah.
And you read this shit and you're like, then you wonder why people are unhappy.
Yeah.
Because this is, unfortunately, in your demon voice especially, this is exactly the foundation of this worldview and the society we have built.
That's right.
It's built on this idea.
That's right.
You know, it's like terrifying in some way.
Well, we're the prodigal son.
Right.
We've gone away from the home of our father. We've gone away from the opulence of that kind of life. And right now, as a species, not all of us, thank God, but many of us are up to our fucking ankles and shit. We're in this dirty, swampy place. We feel so lonely. Mm-hmm. Here's one of the big problems, man. Oh, yeah. No, like, for a lot of people, if they're feeling bad, what'll happen is, like, after work, they'll call their one or two friends. And maybe they'll catch him.
Mm-hmm.
And if they catch him, they'll have a brief conversation. And in that conversation, they'll be like, all right, well, maybe we can go get drinks this weekend and talk. Hope you feel better. Okay, man, I'll see you this weekend.
Yep.
That's it.
Yep.
It used to be, there was no, like, you didn't go to work.
Right.
You woke up and you quote, worked. But it wasn't work.
Yeah.
You woke up with your friends. You woke up with your family. You woke up and the sun was there. Maybe you were up a little early and maybe you started doing some of the stuff that people were going to do. And then other people would come out and they might be a little hungover or whatever. And they might not be able to work and you might make fun of them, but it was hilarious. And then everyone would just like come together and then watch the sun. And you wouldn't even have a, you wouldn't know what time mm-hmm. it was. You would just know, oh shit, it's going to get like, it's going to get pretty hot yep. soon. So let's go on. Let's find some shade until this. And it was beautiful, right? Yep. And if you were hurting in that situation, you would go up to, you would have these conversations with people mm-hmm. separately away from the group. And in these conversations, people would probably say something along the lines of, I just want you to know, I really love you.
Right.
You're really amazing. You're really wonderful. We love you. You know, we love you. That's a lot of the message that you're getting, but it's not coming from over a fucking margarita at a bar. It's coming in different ways from different people. And how can you not be healed when you keep hearing that? You know? That's what we're missing.
Yeah, man, I notice it on myself. There are times when it's like, okay, so in 3 days we're going to meet between noon and 1 o'clock at this place, and that's your healing happy moment.
Yeah.
And then it's like 12:15 and I'm like, well, motherfucker, are you wasting my time or what? Because I'm not feeling quite fully healed and happy yeah. now. Make it quick because I need yeah. to go back to work. And it's yeah. like, it doesn't, you know, it needs organic time. You cannot fucking fit the 1.5 hour, 90 minutes, 3 days from now of friendship moment that's going to heal me. It doesn't work that way. You know?
Feeling down, are you feeling like you may want to kill yourself? Here's a number, do a suicide hotline.
Right. Yep.
So you pick up the phone and you call someone you've never met in your life.
Yep.
And you tell them you're thinking about blowing your fucking brains out. And the reason is because you're starving mm-hmm. and you, but it ain't food. Food's easy to get.
Yeah.
How the fuck do we get a tribe?
Uh-huh.
How do you get a community?
Exactly.
How do you find a group of people around you that are, how do you do it? It would take a miracle to find mm-hmm. something like that, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. And I think that's where I'm excited about some of the possibilities of the future. Because it's a lot harder when you have to go 9 to 5 into a physical place to work. The odds that you're going to be able to meet the people that you click with in that one place, or right, they are more limited.
Right.
If we move into a place where people can work from home, people can work from wherever the fuck they are, then you can choose where you live a lot more.
Right.
You're not as limited. And then the odds that you can connect with people that you really click with and you do live together or even travel together or whatever the hell, that makes it so much better. You can still get stuff done, but you do it around the people whose company you enjoy.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a great model. Whatever that is, man, that would be incredible. Little collectives instead of corporate. You could even use the corporate model, but have collectives mm-hmm. instead of corporations. Buy land with groups of people.
Yep.
Figure out ways to do this the problem is, man, it's like, we're not good at it because we have no idea because the whole thing got fragmented by these satanic fucks.
Yeah.
So now we don't understand how to do it. Like we're clinging to shit. Mm-hmm. We're holding on to stuff. We want to.
Of course.
We want to be hard. We think that that's one of the fucking signs of success in the world is to be a hardened Machiavellian shitbag.
I'm independent. I don't need anybody.
That.
You know, it's
which, by the way, is one of the signs of PTSD.
Right.
You know, when people have post-traumatic mm-hmm. stress disorder, will not tell you they're feeling bad because they want to be tough.
Yep.
So this like reverberating trauma that is inescapable and is inside of them
mm-hmm.
is coming out in a form of gruff affability.
Yep.
You know, it's coming out in a form of just like, oh, we don't do that here. No, we don't laugh. No, we don't. I'm never going to cry.
Yeah.
And if I tell you I love you, I'm going to get it out of the way real quick.
Right.
I'm like, I just want you to know, I really love you, man. All right, see you, bye.
Yeah. Or is it like you see how people hug each other where it's like pat on the back with like a foot distance between one another because otherwise I may feel something and that just, you know.
Oh, yeah. And also one of the, I might feel something.
Yeah.
And if I feel something, then this dome of this force field I've mm-hmm. constructed keeping me away from experiencing one of the most beautiful things there is might be shattered by your affection.
Totally, man.
Hey, man, I'm not a hugger. I don't do that. That's not my thing, man.
Yep.
I don't do that. God forbid you should feel that. God forbid.
And it's funny because then people wonder where they are lonely and miserable. And what happens is because you're lonely and miserable, then at least you're working, you're making some money. So you feel like, I'm just going to go out and buy myself something cool to feel better about the fact that my life sucks. So, yeah. Hey, now I have a PS4. Now I have this thing. And it's all good stuff. But the problem is you do it to fill that void. And it doesn't. So now you have spent a bunch of money, which means you're tied even deeper to that shitty work that alienates you, that takes your time and energy and doesn't allow you to hang out with people that would actually make you happy. So you do more of that. So you feel crappier about your life. So then you want to buy more stuff, which makes you work more, which makes you more miserable. Yeah. It's like it's this nasty, vicious cycle. It's like, I don't think that buying more stuff is what's going to really, you know, if eventually I just buy a little more, then I'm going to be happy. So it doesn't work in the last 25 times you have done it. I don't think that time 26 is going to do it.
What do you do? I mean, the problem is like, how do you find these people? It's like,
it's fucking hard.
Where are they? I mean, they do exist. There's no question about it. And I think that a lot more of them exist than maybe people realize. But it's like, how do you find intentional communities where you're not going to end up like listening to some fucking dude in thick sunglasses playing heavy metal guitar to your fucking daughter who he just mouth fucked a few hours ago. Right? Like, how do you avoid? Because that's the other problem is like, you know, how, I guess the thing is we've been, what we see on TV is only the bad examples of intentional communities.
Sure.
It's very rare that on TV you're going to see like, look at this. They recycle everything. They use solar panels. Yeah. They're all pretty happy and they're pretty healthy and they feel good all the time. It's not really a story. You want to see Koresh.
Sure.
You want to see
the Jonestown of the world. Yeah, of course. No, and I think part of the problem is that the way work is still structured makes it very difficult to have that happening because you need to have a bunch of people who are willing to give up work to some degree because we are not yet at a place where people can do their work anywhere they want, most people at least. So you may run into some awesome human beings, but they are tied to a place and a job and a thing that makes it very hard for them to be able to say, okay, let's live in Big Bear for the next 6 months with our group of friends. Yeah. And it's not going to work that way. And so what you do find is the people who do try those things are usually the outliers who are either really fucking desperate and they are willing to do anything. And more often than not, then you crash and burn because it's like, well, that's a sweet attempt, but it doesn't have a foundation.
Or the foundation is one person.
Yeah, exactly.
That's another problem.
Which then turns into a straight up cult. It's not easy. It's like, it's not fucking easy for that many people to be able to harmonize for themselves to figure out in their own life how they can balance it all, the work, making some money at the same time, it's hard for one person, let alone when you put 30 people together where they not only have to click for their own issue, they have to click with one another in every way. That's really difficult.
This may be why, and I don't want it to happen, but this may be why we're going to need things to get a little wobbly so that folks can't go to work. They got to get together and they got to start helping each other.
Well, in fact, think about two of the shows that have attracted the most attention in the last 10, 15 years. Walking Dead and Lost, right? And they both have the exact same story in a weird kind of way. They both are about this group of people who got nothing in common with one another, who are thrown into this universe where they have to create a tribe and survive and function. And it's totally fucking fascinating to most people. Because it's not the zombies that attract people. It's not the weird island where you don't understand what the fuck is happening, what that attracts people. It's that tribe that attracts people. It's this idea of how do we make a living in 40 of us in this environment where all the laws don't apply, where there's no work to go to, and yet we still have to make a living. Yeah. We still have to work with one another. That, to me, speaks on a deeper, why some of these shows that hook people is because it speaks to a deeper level to what we have forgotten, to what, a human life has been for most of the time. And that's why I like them, right? I'm completely fascinated. I started watching Lost again after I hadn't seen it back then. And the funny thing is I don't fucking understand what's happening the plot is meaningless to me. And I don't care. I'm fascinated by the human dynamics between them, the interactions between them. That's what, to me, the whole thing is about. And same for Walking Dead, same for, I'm intrigued with the human dynamics of a tribe.
That's it. Yeah. Well, that's where we're headed. I mean, we will head mm-hmm. there. You know, someone actually told me, God forgive me for saying this, someone actually told me at Burning Man, they said, the world will end in war or in festivals.
I like that.
And it's so true, man, because it's like, when you look at what's going on in a war, and the reason people think about why people at war, when they come back from war, they want to go back.
Mm-hmm.
Do they want to go back to war because they want to kill people?
It's the community.
Yeah, they want to go back for the community. Yep. They're fucking. They've met these people mm-hmm. who are incredibly proficient, who save their lives, who give their lives for each other for nothing.
Yep.
That's what we call, this motherfucker, who said that? Is that Dawes who said
Henry
that shit?
Dawes, yeah. He was a senator.
He pulled it off.
Yep.
Henry Dawes was a fucking incarnation of Lucifer, because the truth of the matter is they have managed mm-hmm. to transform festival into war.
Yep.
They've managed to create one of the only reasons that you would like give your life for a stranger
mm-hmm.
is because you're wearing the same uniform.
Yep.
And you're against some other group of strangers. When it's like, the reality is, what we long for is that moment of looking at someone and realizing, I would give this person
mm-hmm.
everything that I have because I love this person.
Right.
Not for what I can get from them, but because I think they're incredible.
Mm-hmm.
They're part of me. I'm part of them. We miss that, man.
Absolutely.
It'll come back. Do you think it'll come back?
My whole life, to be honest, I've been fascinated with this idea and trying to figure out how it can happen. I think the key number one step would be removing work from purely a physical spot. You know, as long as people have to go to an office, no, it's not going to happen, you know, because you'd have to redesign cities from beginning to end to create. It's like, good luck finding apartments where you all live next to one another and then you all go to it. That's not going to happen. So I think the first step would be work need to be removed from a physical location where people can do it anywhere. Then they have freedom of choice. Then they can choose to live together with people who don't have the same job, who have a whole... That, to me, is step one. And I think it's possible because clearly internet is making the number of jobs that you can do from home is definitely increasing. There's still a certain virus of the mind that there are a bunch of jobs where you don't have to be physically present, but there's still that fear of, if we let the workers go, if they just have to turn in the work to us, then I'm not watching over them, then shit is not going to get done. Where the reality is, not really, you know, to me is, if I tell you, go to the beach for the next month, I don't fucking need to see you, just get the work done, send me the stuff in, and if it's done high quality, leave on the beach for all I care. I don't need to. That would be a step that makes it, start making it possible.
Yeah, that's a step.
Yeah.
Another step is these fucking hurricanes decimate everything. To the point where the
Walking Dead becomes a reality.
Where property is irrelevant because everything's been wiped clean.
Yeah.
Because the thing is, man, when I look at like a field of decimation wrought mm-hmm. by a hurricane, that is only a tragedy. I mean, in the current paradigm, it's a tragedy.
Sure.
In a paradigm where like we all just work together to help each other and property isn't necessarily like the way we currently look mm-hmm. at it, it's just annoying.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, fuck, we built this. Now we've got to spend the next couple of months rebuilding this.
Yep.
We're just going to put all our shit together and make this back to the way it was.
Right.
It's no insurance or anything mm-hmm. like that. We're just going to take our stuff and we're going to make it. It's annoying. But it's going to be fun.
Yep.
Because sometimes at night we're going to eat mushrooms.
Right.
And sometimes we're going to drink while we do this shit.
Absolutely.
And sometimes we're going to like just stop in the middle of the whole thing and start singing together.
Exactly, man.
At that point, it just becomes like, oh, it's just stuff that we need to do here. You know, so it's interesting. We're in interesting times, Daniele.
We sure are, my man.
But as long as you're here, there's hope, I think.
I think you summed it up perfectly. I think that's what it all boils down to.
Yes.
I watched Star Wars when I was a kid. Bolelli, you're our only hope.
Yes,
of course.
Lead us. I'll follow you to the ends of the world.
Let's do that.
Let's make it happen, man.
I'm down. Let's do that. So now, you sweet people, if you have done nothing nice in your life, you spit on babies and kick puppies, do one thing that will redeem you for it all, check out History on Fire. I tell epic tales about human history, some pretty fucking dark, some not so dark, and there's actually a happiness there. Either way, check it out. That would be sweet.
The next time you find yourself completely infected by the fear-mongering of these lunatic corporatists who are blasting out bullshit into our brains constantly, tune into a little bit of History on Fire, cleanse the palate of your mind, recognize that we have just come running out of the drooling acidic maw of hell, which is history. We just made it out, man. We're in a wonderful place right now.
Yes.
It'll cleanse the palate. It'll make you feel a little happier.
I'm down with that.
Cool, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
That was Daniele Bolelli, everybody. Be sure to check out his podcast, History on Fire. You can find out everything you need to know about Mr. Bolelli by going to danielebolelli.com. That is DanieleBolelli.com. Links at DuncanTrussell.com. Much thanks to Squarespace for supporting this episode, and much thanks to you for listening. I'll see you guys in a few days. We have an amazing array of podcasts coming down the pipe. Much love to you. May God bless every hair on your sweet little pubic mound. I'll see you soon. Hare Krishna.